to our beautiful deep community, I want to assure you the deeper is going nowhere. And the same incredible content will be released every week, but now through Arise. It is going to be less trauma heavy and more inspirational, uplifting, but it will still challenge and push you to grow. For all your deeper episodes, they are still available every fortnight. You can still get your deep hit with the deeper subscription.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Parents who have lost a child, they're so incredibly isolated. Everyone is tiptoeing around them. People cross the street to avoid them because they worry that it's contagious, that talking about even a child dying is going to make it happen to them. Like it is a very, very isolating experience. Nobody should ever have to bury their child. And being mums ourselves, Zoe, like you don't want to imagine it.
Welcome to The Deep. I'm Zoe Marshall. In my early 20s, a lot of traumatic things happened. And ever since then, I have had this fascination with people and their stories. This is The Deep. I acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which I work and live, and recognise their continuing connection to land, water, and community. I pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging. Since we often discuss trauma and loss on this podcast, I really wanted to spend some time unpacking grief in a helpful way. Sal and Im from Good Morning Podcast are joining me today to chat through some helpful ways to process grief, including loss of a parent, loss of a child, and how different cultures handle grief. Imogen, Sal, welcome to The Deep.
It's a pleasure to be here, Zoe.
Thanks for having us.
You are the Good Morning Gals. You have this incredible podcast that is all things grief. And I wanted to ask you on here today because we have a lot of this on The Deep. And I don't want to say you're grief experts because that's kind of shit kind of thing to be an expert of. But you kind of are in a very non-like psychological, you know, I'm a therapist kind of way, would you say?
Definitely. I think we bring the personal lived experiences to grief. So we're kind of like, I guess, experts in a lived experience way, and we represent the realities of grief that you might not always feel that you see reflected when you are reading something medical or clinical. I think we're a real representation, aren't we, Im, of this thing that we all go through that's really shit.
I think everyone's an expert if they've been through grief. They know exactly what it's like, and it's different for everyone as well. But yeah, we studied grief essentially, and we've gone on to write a book about it, and we have listened to people all over the world about how it's impacted their lives. So I would say we know a thing or two about the topic.
The thing is, I actually do learn quite a lot from you two regarding grief that I think you would have learnt through lots of experts that you've spoken to and hearing all of these stories. And I wanted to really, I guess my objective for having you both here is people are drawn to stories and storytelling like The Deep and like your podcast, Good Morning, because they are hungry to find a connecting point from themselves and to other. Of course, there's like a small minority that are just curious, right, and haven't had the lived experience and want to understand. But for most of us, when we're in deep throngs of trauma and pain and overcoming, you're wanting to hear that other people are there, aside, just like you, that have survived it. We are a part of a dead mother's club, and I don't want to put it so bluntly, but we are, the three of us. What have you felt? Because there's so many different types of grief, right? Losing a child, losing a partner, losing a parent. Let's start here with losing parents. What is the overarching kind of learning that you've had about grieving and the loss of a parent at kind of, I would say, a youngish age between all of us? You know, I was 20s, and we could say that all the way up to if you're a child and lost a parent. What are your learnings, Imogen, that people have shared with you that you've kind of extracted along the way about losing parents?
One of the big learnings is that it doesn't matter how old you are, losing a parent is earth-shattering. And although it is in the natural order of things, it can completely change your life. And again, everyone's experience is unique, and it also depends on what your relationship was with the person who died, with the parent who died. Like, some people don't have a close relationship with them, and that grief can look very different to how it did for all of us who had good relationships with our mums. So I think losing a mum specifically, if you had a good relationship with her, you can lose a massive support network in your life, and that unconditional love that you can only really get from a parent as well, which I've found really challenging to lose.
It definitely feels like an ongoing, like the more that life happens post the death, right? So a marriage or a birth or other deaths or all of those things that happen throughout life. And Sally, I know you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's this incredible gaping wound that somehow just doesn't get easier. Like, in some ways it just gets harder because the more time that goes on, the more that has been missed. In your experience, and speaking to so many of those other children that have lost parents, have you found resources or ways to make this easier?
It varies, right? We're all different, and what's going to help us as time goes by varies from person to person. But for Im and I, it has been talking about it, talking about our grief. I know it's probably the same for you, Zoe, all of us having podcasts, but talking, verbalizing, and also doing something in their memory, I think for Im and I, has been a really important way to come to terms with our grief, but also to channel it into something that's going to help other people. I think communication, though, has definitely been the most important thing. And we hear from our community members, you know, we've got hundreds of thousands of community members across the globe, and they have all said primarily that having connection with other people who are going through grief has been one of the most important things. And I think because we live in quite a grief-denying society in the West, it can be really hard to find those people or to initiate conversations with people and know what to say. So I think it's really important that we have conversations like this to talk more openly about grief, because it's one of those things, I think, that when you do talk openly about it to somebody, quite often you will find that sense of connection, and that can be really powerful in helping you get through. I know it's certainly been the case for us, hasn't it, Im?
Yeah, well, we met basically the dead mum's meetup, which we never imagined ourselves finding ourselves in a place like that. But we both, although we had really good support from our friends and family, we still felt really isolated. And I think that's a really common experience. People experiencing all different types of grief feel. Grief is really isolating. And as a society, we don't do well with talking about hard topics. And that's why we love your podcast so much, Zoe. You do a really good job at tackling the taboo, you know, that nobody else wants to speak about. And it's super important too, because death, unfortunately, is something that happens to all of us, and it's important to know what to expect and also to connect with others who are going through something similar. So yeah, as I mentioned, Sal and I met through a support group for motherless daughters, and we had friends who had experienced grief before, but not specifically mother loss. And it was really helpful for both of us to meet each other and bounce off each other and compare notes about how wild grief is, because you have no idea until it happens to you how much it impacts every single facet of your life and can turn it upside down, impacts your self-confidence, your self-worth, changes your views on things. Like it's a life-changing experience for many people. So it was really refreshing to meet someone that understood the depths of what I was experiencing, and it was like a mirror being held up almost.
Imogen, do you feel that, this is going to sound brutal, that, when like someone dies of old age, a grandpa or a grandma, and people are devastated, do you have less empathy because like they're an old person and they were going to die, or what's your view? And I'm saying that I think because I do, and this is, I'm not trying to trigger any listeners, but like, obviously I have older people in my life as well, and I know they're going to die. And I think even when my grandparents died post my mom, it wasn't like the train hit me, you know, like my mother was like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, yeah, of course they're going to die. Like, it's sad, but it's not like gut-wrenching, guttural, on the floor, not eating, not drinking. It's different, right? Do you think there are different levels of grief?
It is absolutely different. And we have both lost grandparents prior to our mum's dying, but it was not earth-shattering. It was sad, sure, but I didn't think about my grandparents 24/7 and ruminate about the loss and wonder how I was going to survive without them, because I think I still had my family unit, you know. I lost a significant part of that when my mum died. They say there's no hierarchy in grief, but I think sometimes some grief is unimaginable to experience. And I'll say that for people who are experiencing child loss.
Yes.
It absolutely is a hierarchy in grief when you've lost a child. You know, that's a completely out of order death. No one should ever have to experience that. So I do think in a sense there is a bit of a hierarchy. And I do think, well, in saying that though, some people's grandparents may have raised them. They could be there maternal figure or their paternal figure, so it could impact them in the same way that our mums died impacted us. So it's, again, it's very unique, but I think there is a difference.
I think it depends on the relationship with the person, but generally speaking, I think it can be, you're more prepared for it, right? It's the nature, it's the order of nature. So sometimes it can feel more acceptable because you kind of know that that's what's going to happen. But when you lose a parent suddenly, or what you feel like is too young, again, it's out of the timeline that you've set for yourself, right? And that's what can make it really difficult.
It's so interesting because my cousin, when our grandmother died, she had such a different reaction to me, you know, and the grief hit her in such a different way. And I'm not trying to speak for her, but I believe it was the first death she'd experienced. And it's just so, it changes you, and it changes, I think, the way you experience death ongoing, you know, it really does. And I guess that's a sad thing as well, if there's a level of us that hardens slightly, maybe, or I'm not sure. But I just found that really fascinating to watch different responses depending on what you had experienced prior to those other people or pets perhaps dying. You know, you've seen friends that are just reeling over a pet. And I get it. Like, I have dogs. Heartbreaking. Like, I totally get it, but it's just so different. I don't know. Do either of you understand what
and
I mean by that?
People compare, like, people compare as well, which can be so devastating for someone. Like, if they've just lost their mum, they go, I know how you feel. My dog died, you know, 2 months ago. Like, it's so minimizing to that person as well. Like, the comparisons that people throw around. But I also want to add that feeling lack of empathy is a normal grief response. Feeling envious of other people is a normal grief response. Absolutely. Yeah. You can feel really apathetic about life and just, it's very, very common. And we've thrown out Q&As with our audience before and they've all felt it. It's normal.
And I love that you brought that up because still I feel envious or irritation when I have friends bitch about their mums. And I'm sure, like, Sally, you've experienced that where you're like, oh my God, I just wish she did more for me, or I wish she like took the kids more, or, and you're just like, oh my God, it's taking everything in me to just shut the fuck up. Yeah. Do you have that?
Yeah. It's infuriating. I remember, Im, I think I called you. I was at the beach once and there was someone sitting next to me that was like ranting about their mum. And you just, I get it. We all take people for granted when they're alive, right? I certainly did with my mum. I think we all do at times. But when you are in the throes of grief and you're neck deep in grief and you hear somebody talking about the person that they have that you don't have anymore, it can really fucking sting. It can hurt hard. Deep breaths. You just got to take a lot of deep breaths. But, you know, I've been in situations before where I felt like saying something, but then I would have looked crazy. But yeah, it's really infuriating at times.
I want to talk about how different cultures grieve, because something I've learned through my husband's culture of, you know, the Maori culture is how they bring the body home and it's open casket and there's a lot of visitors and there's a lot of wailing and there's touching and there's holding, and it feels like a very contained, safe environment to let it all out. As we know, it continues on and on, but that initial kind of state of shock and intensity is allowed to pour out in this container. And I think it is the most beautiful experience. There's no shame. There's nothing odd or weird. And I wonder if through your experience of talking to lots of people and death, there are other customs or cultures that you like the sound of that could be helpful to share with others.
I personally am interested in the Jewish tradition of Shiva, and I think it mirrors some of the Maori tradition in a sense that there is that community. You come together to grieve for a set period of time. Theirs is 7 days. And during that 7 days, you can't wash your hair. There are certain rules. You don't have to speak to anyone. And it's really giving that permission to really sit in the pain, process your grief. And as we all know, it's not just a 7 day thing, but it is giving yourself a chance to not only go deep into your grief and process and express, but also it's that sense of community, right? And connection, which is so important when you're processing and coping with a death. And I think that having that allotted time can make your grief visible, but also give you a chance to connect with other people who are going to help you on your journey. And also it makes grief visible, doesn't it, within your community. So my husband, he's not Maori, but he grew up in Maori communities. So he, similar to your husband, Zoe, he's been around death when he was younger. And I think it's really important for kids to be educated and to understand death. Because I think in the West, because we don't have these traditions and we don't have these practices when it comes to death and grief and facing our mortality, that's why we find it so hard to face and talk about, because we're not brought up with it. You know, I remember when my mum lost both of her parents, we never spoke about it. And I really regret that now, having been in the position of losing her. I wish I'd support her more. I wish I'd ask questions. But I didn't. And I think because we shy away from talking about it, that can be really detrimental to how we cope. Whereas in certain traditions like Maori culture, Jewish culture, it's right there. You're brought up with it from a young age and you accept it's part of life. So I think maybe then, not that it makes it easier to deal with when it happens to you, but you know that there is a place for you to land,
yeah,
and have that sense of community and ritual. And I think that's really important. I think that's a big part of what we are missing in certain parts of the West.
I love South American culture where they celebrate death and life. Like, it's a celebration if you look to the Day of the Dead. Like, they're not afraid of death. And I think in the West, we're so petrified of our mortality. We don't face it. We pretend like we're all immortal and we're going to be here forever. And when people die, we don't say or do the right things. We're so awkward and uncomfortable with death. So I think we can look to other cultures to see how they, you know, celebrate it and have, I mean, both Sal and I were become very spiritual since our mums died as well. And we believe in the afterlife. We believe that there's much more to this earth than we can, you know, see. And we've connected with mediums and that's brought us so much comfort in our grief as well. But yeah, I think not being afraid so much of death and seeing it as a natural part of life is a good way to go.
The other thing I think is so interesting, and we deny ourselves terribly in the Western culture, is, you know, post-birth, postpartum, we don't have a lot of resources and support. But when you look to the East, there is so much. And so we're learning that if you're into that kind of holistic or alternate way of being postpartum. I have interviewed a death doula as well. And I find it, imagine, you know, if you got to integrate all of those traditions for all these different cultures and having, you know, like a month or however long it is that everyone knew and community turned up to be with you in your grief, in whatever way that looks like. And you didn't have to answer a phone call or you didn't have to work or like, imagine the way that we would integrate back into society versus we're constantly like hit with these ticking time bombs of grief that go off. You know, I know a lot of men that have buried grief and then have psychotic episodes, become suicidal, become depressed, become anxious. And I it's just like this strange normalized thing that it's like, oh yeah, they had an episode because they don't deal with their grief. Like, it feels we may have to be the ones that make the change because it doesn't feel like it's actually going to be there any other way, you know, surrounding ourselves with people and customs and traditions and bringing those things in when there is a death and being the weird one of the family might be the way forward. Because I actually don't know how we're going to do it otherwise. Like, you'll know now, Imogen, Sal, I'm not sure if you've birthed since the last time we spoke, but
not since we last spoke.
Perfect, just checking. But being parents, I have found now, and I think Imogen, you and I spoke about this, is when you've had your parent, your mother, be the cornerstone of the family, be the heart, be the rock that brought everyone together, that had all the customs, traditions, that person goes. And then you're kind of going around the world as like an individual. Then you have a baby and you're like, holy fuck, I'm the one that has to now start traditions, start customs, start all of this stuff is now on me to create. It actually may also be on our generation, because if we're in the generation now that, like, say 30s, 40s, those parents are dying, right? You might be the one that has to bring in a death doula or has to bring in, we're going to grieve a little bit differently, or I'd like to propose that no one has to speak or wash their hair or what. I've learned these beautiful, like, it might actually be us that now brings in more customary things.
I think so. And it's a big job to have. I feel like we are a part of a generation of a lot of cycle breakers, as well. And I think that happens like when we lose someone, like how the family unit or the wider community deal with that loss. We haven't been doing it very well for a long time. And I do think it is time for change. And I'm really conscious of that with my own child, with my daughter. She's 4 now. And I talk about death with her. We talk about her grandma all the time. She was 9 months old when my mum died, but they're very connected.
Mm.
And I know you can probably relate to this, Zoe, but I think it is on us to change the way that we grieve. And that's what Sal and I are hoping to do with Good Morning. And we feel like it's a movement to change the way we think and we talk about death in the West, because it really needs to be some change.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Can we now move on to, I just kind of want to talk about subcategories for a moment. It was really sad. You may have seen it. Influencer's baby died of SIDS in the past week. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she's been quite openly sharing her grief and being, I mean, that's a lot for her to hold, is all the comments and all this judgment and all of the things that come with such a difficult death. Like, I'm assuming it's SIDS, no one even knows, right? But a cot death, right? So, like, it would be maddening to work that out. Have you, through your experiences interviewing people and exploring child loss, learnt anything that differs from parent loss in any capacity, whether that's to cope or how not to cope or things that have, you know, fascinated you through those learnings? Is there anything you can share on child loss?
I remember when we interviewed our first child loss guest, and we both just wanted the floor to open up and swallow us whole. Like, we felt completely unprepared. We felt terrified to say the wrong thing or, you know, be, it was a really terrifying experience. And all the more reason for us to have this conversation and to talk about this, because there is a small room somewhere where parents who have lost a child, they're so incredibly isolated. Everyone is tiptoeing around them. People cross the street to avoid them because they worry that it's contagious, that talking about even a child dying is going to make it happen to them. Like, it is a very, very isolating experience, and it's a topic that doesn't get enough airtime. And I think it's important to talk about this. It's like we mentioned earlier, it's an out of order death. It shouldn't happen. Nobody should ever have to bury their child. And being mums ourselves, Zoe, like, you don't want to imagine it. Like, you can, and people should. And that's another thing that people say is, oh, I couldn't imagine. But you could, and you should, because it can happen to anyone. It doesn't discriminate. And it's a devastating loss. And you lose your entire imagined future with that child.
Yeah.
And you have to live with that.
There are lots of secondary losses that come when you lose a child, like the imagined future, the sense of the routine, the structure, the family unit structure, your sense of purpose or role in the world. There's lots of different things that you can feel like you're losing on top of your child. But I think, like Im said, the isolation of child loss is perhaps more amplified than mother loss, again, because it's so out of the natural order of things, but also because people just don't know what to say. And so they don't say anything.
I did an episode with Rachel Casella, who lost beautiful Mackenzie, her daughter, at 9 months. I remember she reached out, and I think I'm quite good at holding space. And I made up every excuse under the sun not to talk to her. And she pushed, because I tell you what, a mother that has lost a child is ferocious at getting what they want. And she was right. And it was such a important conversation for me to have, because really what it was is my great, sitting with someone that is living my greatest fear. And so she told this story and I cried. I just cried for the whole hour in which she shared her experience and talked about Mackenzie, and also the incredible like gift Mackenzie gave her to go on this path of making it accessible for everyone to have genetic testing, because we didn't have access, and it's now available because of Mackenzie and Rachel and her husband Johnny. And I'm in this mother's group now. It's a group of women that have been through a lot of trauma around babies and children. And, you know, the learnings that I've had through them is, I guess, the reoccurring trauma of trying to have a baby again. Those milestones of when your child reaches, whether that's in utero or not, reaching milestones. You know, one of them has had a stillbirth, and all of that is so, there's a lot of PTSD attached to the death of a child or a baby. And I think that is something that people are just, you know, they've lost friends, they've lost family members. And you're right, it's, I think, so fucked up to say this, but socially acceptable hierarchy of grandparent going, we can cope. Parent, oh, okay, that's tough, but that's okay. Child and baby is like, I can't look at this. It's unimaginable. This is contagious. You're right. This is going to, I'll fuck it up. I'll say the wrong thing. The impact is so devastating, even beyond the loss of the child, like that grief, and then all of the other fallouts. Yeah. And these women, all they want is for you to talk about their, you know, children that have passed. They just want you to ask questions, and they just want you to say their name, and they just want to, you know, we have in this WhatsApp every time there's like certain numbers. If it's 444, it's one of the kids. And if it's 111, and we all send it. If we know, it's just like, makes me emotional, but just like the honoring of the babies that have gone, just how impactful that is for the parents that have to live with it day in and day out. And they're like, the longing for the babies, even when you have other babies, they don't feel the place of that child. It's like the longing of that baby is just haunting, you know, it's a forever thing. So I wanted to talk about that. And then I wanted to talk to you about ways in which you would find through your experiences helpful for those that haven't lost but are trying to support. The biggest one of all, you know, like I'm sure you'd have so many people that are just wanting to support a friend or a lover or a family member that is experiencing true grief on how to be better. Imogen, can you help us with some of those learnings, and Sal, you can pick up after that?
Absolutely. It is really simple. I know how daunting it can feel to support someone through grief. I've been there. I've said and done all the wrong things myself.
Can we name those wrong things?
I definitely would have dished out some unhelpful platitudes, which we all are guilty of at some point in our lives. Like I think I've said to a friend that's gone through grief, they're in a better place, or they wouldn't want you to be sad. I definitely would have said that, because it came from a place of me being, well, I'm aware now where it stemmed from. It was me really uncomfortable seeing them in pain and wanting to fix it. because I didn't know what else to do or say. And it's hard and it's difficult to see people you love hurting. So unfortunately, we do have all these cliches and platitudes that we say to intended to try and fix the person. They are well-meaning. But what I now know through the work that we've done and also experiencing grief myself is it can be incredibly minimizing to the person on the receiving end. So we tell people to just listen, just sit there and listen, and you don't have to say anything flowery or poetic to make them feel better, because nothing you do or say is going to make it any better. Nothing you say is going to bring that person back. They need support, they need acknowledgement, and they need you to just hold that space for them. And it's hard to do. You know, we talked about how difficult it is holding space for child loss, but any loss, if you're not equipped for it, it's really difficult and it's uncomfortable. So we have to learn to sit in that uncomfortableness, and that can be a real gift to people who are grieving.
Mm. Can I add something before we move to Sal? I think we think if we hold space, and I want to explain what that is to people that are like, that sounds interesting. If someone is losing it, right, and we've talked about the wall slides together outside of this conversation, which is, you know, you're so full of grief, your body literally slides down the floor into a puddle. You know, we've talked about grief before as screaming and rage and howling and guttural sounds or punching things. Grief can be just sobbing, and it can be anything, right? So holding the space would be sitting in some kind of vicinity of that person with an open body language that isn't doing anything but saying, I am here, right? And I think the thing is, if someone is screaming and howling, it's confronting. It's sad. It could make you cry. You could join in. You could not know. You could start shaking. And I think all of the things are okay, because we want to contain the person by helping them and fixing, but they just need to release and express and feel without. And if they say, leave the room, leave the room. If they say, come closer, come closer. If you are close to them, you could say, I'm going to put my hand on your back. Or if they shake the head, take it off. I think it's about bringing in a little bit of emotional intelligence outside of what you have to do to cope in the moment. It's like, forget your needs when someone who is hurting more than you just needs you to be in space with them. Is that, Sal, your interpretation of holding space?
It's pretty spot on. And I would also add to that, it's allowing yourself to be vulnerable and surrendering to the fact that there's going to be pain. You might feel pain too, like you just said. There will be emotions, there'll be difficult things. So surrendering to it, and also practicing active listening. So like Im mentioned, it's not about trying to fix it, but it's also really being present in that moment with them and listening with intent and intention, which can be really powerful. It's not easy to do, but it can be so, so important when you're holding space for somebody in deep pain. And you asked about what other things can be helpful if somebody is wanting to support anyone who is in deep grief. There are a few things. Being real in your language can be really helpful. So like Im mentioned, not trying to find something flowery or poetic to say, but just acknowledging that it's really hard. That if you don't know what to say, or you haven't got a lot of experience with grief, that's also okay. And almost owning your awkwardness. If you want to be there for somebody, but you don't really know what to do, you can say that. You can say, like, I'm really, you know, my heart breaks for you that you're going through this. I actually haven't experienced a death before, so I'm not really sure if I'm going to say or do the right thing, but I want you to know that, you know, I'm thinking of you and I'm here for you. And there can also be such power in in support that's not only emotional but also practical.
Mm.
Often when we're coping with a death, we've got so much to do, so much admin, and we call it dead min because it's just so hectic.
So much.
But also your brain scrambled so much and you're exhausted and you've got loads of things to do. So thinking about what you might be able to do to help that person live each day a little bit easier, it might be as simple as walking their dog or collecting the kids from school. But if you are going to offer practical support, just be really mindful not to give them another thing to make a decision about. So not saying, hey, is there anything I can do? Because often that's,
you can't
like,
delegate.
People don't want to put on you. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I don't want to, I don't, quite often people feel like, I don't want to ask someone to do something for me, or I can't think, my brain scrambled. So just saying, hey, I can be at your place 5 p.m. every day this week to walk the dog. Is that cool by you? Where can I find the keys or whatever? And just almost like telling them, obviously in a polite way, that can be really helpful because we do need all the support we can get emotionally and practically when we're grieving, especially in the early days. But we definitely don't need another thing to think about.
I just had a thought, like when you were talking about, you know, the wall sliding and just that guttural pain. And I think that is one of the big reasons why especially men suppress their grief. A lot of people suppress their grief, is that we don't have that container where we can safely do that because people don't know how to hold that space for us. And so we have all, well, grief is so much more than just feeling sad, right? It's so many things. It's rage, like you mentioned, it's envy, it's so many complicated emotions, and it's also incredibly physical. So we don't get given that safe space to express what's going on for us. So we suppress it and we push it down and we go back to work, you know, 5 days after a significant loss, and we have to sit in meetings and we have to pretend like we're fine and put on the facade. And I think that's what's breaking us. And I think that's what's taking people so long to heal or to come to a place of understanding with their grief where they can slowly begin to move forward, is because we don't have that safe space at the moment. I think that is what needs to change. People supporting need to know how we can, you know, provide people with that. And I think practical support is a huge help. I was wall sliding for sure. I was on the floor howling for days, but I couldn't walk my dog. I had to feed my child. Like, how am I supposed to do all of those things when I'm in such significant pain? It's the magnitude was just huge.
I think it's also, we as the griever are unsure at what level people can hold space for us. You know, to be screaming and feeling quite violent through grief, it's hard because it's not like you want to brief them, hey, I'm going to be feeling quite violent now, but I just need you to hold space. Like, that's, it's very complex.
Trigger warning.
Right? Yeah. It's almost like we need a document that's like written that is like, the death has happened, these could be the things, I'm okay if you're okay. It's so odd because I'm saying this in such a layman way because it literally, I think people would feel like, is this too private? Is this too, do you want this on your own? Is this when I step out? Like, I can be here for a bit of sobbing, but if you're going to wail, I'm wondering if that's a you thing. I feel like it should probably be a before death conversation with a lot of people, with your core group. Hey, I want you to know, if someone dies that's close to you, or if something really bad happens and you are in a grief response and it looks like anything, you can call, I can handle, you know, like it's almost like, who do you give your organs to when you die? But it's like a different conversation of how much can you cope with, what can I call on you for? And some friends would be like, I am not capable to hold space, but I will be the food train girl. Or do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I've just had an epiphany. We kind of need to create some kind of community structure that allows people to know their limits and limitations, and also where they're best being of service.
Yes, like a support roster, like a scale of, yeah, where do you sit on the support scale? I love
that. Wailing's
a
boundary. No.
Yeah. And you know what? That would actually alleviate one of the biggest pain points that we hear from our community of grievers. One of the most common things that can happen when you experience a loss is the people that you thought would show up for you don't. Now, that can also be the fact that the people that you thought were going to show up for you emotionally don't. And so we can maybe sometimes be quick to go, they've been a crap friend, they haven't shown up for me. But actually, they might be your lasagna friend, not your howling friend, right? They might be the one that can walk the dog and pop round and offer that support, but they can't meet you at that emotional, that screaming level. There's another friend for that who maybe lives far away, so hasn't been able to come and show you what they're capable of.
So
and I think that having that awareness that different friends can play different roles, we talk about this in our book, don't we, in like different friend, kind of almost putting your friends in different buckets. You know, you've got, you might have your emotional support friends that can really front up and be there for you in your darkest hours. You might have a friend that absolutely can't do that, but is so practical and could find the best probate solicitor for you.
Yes.
Or you could have a friend, you know, like that can take you on a great night out when you really need it and you need just a bit of release, but they're not practical or emotional. So I think it's almost like giving people some grace if you feel like they haven't been there for you in the way that you think you need, maybe trying to reframe it. That can also take a lot of pressure off yourself and your expectations by lowering them.
And maybe doing that before shit hits the fan, you know, like let's, next time we're having a girls' dinner, let's just have this conversation, because I would love to know, you know, I'll make a note of that and you can make a note and we all know, right, who does what.
I feel like I know what friend you'd be, Zoe. You'd be,
you know,
you'd be all in. You'd be all in. You'd be like, give me the wailing.
I'd be all in.
You would be holding space for that wall sliding.
I feel like you two would as well. And the problem is, though, about this is I think that we would become that for everybody. And what we're encouraging is, okay, you can be the lasagna friend, you can be the dog walking friend, but I would challenge you to still be emotionally available for some element. You can tap out to Zoe when it's too much, but I think for the growth and the bonding of our relationship, and what I essentially need is to put your discomfort just a little here. You don't have to be here for the violent surges, but you can be here for wailing. You could be here for spooning. You could be here for when it all dies down and I am just a shell of a human and I need to be spooned. You could be that girl. But I think that allowing people to just get off to be the lasagna girl isn't going to cut it if they're actually your core group. You know, that everyone's going to have to turn up for hold space. We're not asking from, you know, the mums that you do drop off with, school drop off. Like, they can be lasagna friend and they can be pet friend. But I think you need your core group, even if they're like, I have no fucking idea, just cry with me. Like, let's just talk about it. Because this might be a 20-year, like, away conversation, but it would be a pretty groundbreaking one. It takes me to my next point, which is partners, bless them, but can be fucking pretty shit at this stuff. Like, I know I had a bit of a health scare this time last year, and all of my coping mechanisms that make me very unstable. When my husband senses it, he freaks out, right? Like, me being the rock and me being unstable just is his trigger to not cope as well. We're working through that for him and I, but I think having that, your partner being able to look at those elements prior to a loss, because life is long. And if you're planning to be with these people for a long time, there can be lots of different levels, right, of grief. I think that they're going to have to go, all right, where am I lacking and what can I do? What can I do to step up here? What do you think about that point, Imogen? Because I know especially we've bonded over this a little bit. And I'm sure you've heard about this through your other podcasts of how it's not helpful. sometimes with the husbands.
The best advice that was ever given to me when I was deep in the resentment of feeling like you are not getting it, like you're not understanding, why can't you give me the support that I need, was to lower my expectation.
Ugh.
And I know that may sound like a cop-out.
Yeah.
But it honestly saved my relationship. And I'll tell you why, because when my mum died, obviously she was my biggest support. I had a baby and I was so traumatized from the loss. I couldn't go back to work and it was in the middle of COVID lockdown. There were so many factors. My partner's family are all in the UK. None of them live in Australia. So we were really struggling on all fronts. And when my mum died, obviously I lost that huge support and the emotional support. And what I came to realize after she died as well, like we had a really codependent relationship, which I wasn't aware of. And so I then turned to my partner because he was the closest to me and expected him to then fill that role of my mum. So I needed him to step up emotionally. I needed him to provide financially. I needed him to read my mind. Because I expect him to be a mind reader. And every time I cried, I expected him to know exactly what I needed and what to do. And it was just, my expectations were way too high and it was breaking us.
Yeah.
And it was building a lot of resentment. And like Sal was talking about before, the buckets, like I don't think our partners are supposed to fill every single role, you know, and I think that's so unrealistic.
But do you feel like from that experience there is levels of resilience that, I'm not just speaking of him, I'm speaking to every partner, they can flex a muscle on? Because I think especially when you're with a very strong partner that kind of has everything in the shit together and is maybe the more emotionally intelligent one, I totally agree with you that they can't do it all, right? They can't hold the baby, feed the baby, hold your emotion, read the mind. I totally get it. It's not fair. But I do feel like we do need to have conversations about emotional resilience in partners, especially for longevity of life and the grief that will arrive in life. I think that they do, yeah, they do need to, I guess, level up, I think, overall, because it seems like a very feminine thing to be able to hold all the things and hold space. And to be honest, if it was the other way around, we are much more capable of reading the mind and having more emotional intelligence and like being in tune and having intuition and all those things, you know. And I wonder about that because there are, you know, we will have friends that die in our lifetime and we will have loss. And I know they're great in whatever way that they're currently great. But I guess what I'm saying is if we're in deeply intuitively looking at ways to expand ourselves to be able to do better at this, I think they can too.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And I think resilience is something that you can learn as well. We've had an incredible resilience expert come on our podcast and the steps that you can take to be more resilient. So I think it would take for them doing a little bit of research and being mm-hmm. like, right, or having the self-awareness as well and wondering in what areas can I grow now? Where am I lacking? And how can I be a little bit more resilient to be there for my partner in times? And I love that percentage analogy as well, which is when your partner's at 20%, you're at 80% to fill in the gap, you know, and then you're picking up the pieces and then it fluctuates and it changes. But you, mm-hmm. I think they do need to step up, absolutely. But yeah, I guess from my experience as well, I was expecting to step up in ways that he wasn't able to at that time because so many other factors came into play.
And I think it's also a grief response, isn't it, to want them to do and know everything because, like, I'm in pain, so you should fix everything. It's, I think it is a grief response and they are set up to fail because we want to be mad. It's like this little perpetuating cycle of like, well, you know, and you're not my mom and you're not this and you don't know. And it's unfair. And you're absolutely right. It is unfair that we expect a lot, but I do feel like there is a percentage of them that could raise the bar of, you know, what is to come, because we're all very, through our experiences of deep loss, hungry to understand why we're in pain or what other people are feeling. And my husband has had deep loss, and he interprets that very differently. And I see that in how I talk to our kids almost daily about my mum. They have symbols of her all around, you know, moths, kookaburras. That's Nana Jan. They talk about it. Ever, my two-year-old is like, I'm scared. And Fox is like, what are you scared about? And they have this conversation about death between the two kids. And I am conscious that he's not talking about his dad. But that's also not my, I feel, I never met him. It's not my place, even though I feel kind of responsible that maybe I should be integrating him. I'm like, well, that's his thing. And I think that's a beautiful kind of example of how men are just overall now, is a little bit of a, yeah, like an analogy of how men cope. Like, it's an example of like, holy shit, okay, that's really interesting, because it's not like he doesn't want to talk about him or remember him. It's just the way in which he can.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we don't talk about grief as a society as much as we should. But then if you layer on the fact that men don't tend to talk about their emotions as openly, right, there's like almost like you've got the grief, but then it's wrapped in the next layer of societal, maybe not feeling pressure that you can express. Yeah, so we need to really crack this. And I think having more open and honest conversations about grief, talking to your friends about it, asking questions as well, asking questions to your partner, like trying to understand what they're going through is one of the most simple and helpful things that you can do. Like educating yourself, being curious, right? Be curious about it.
And I think there are micro ways that we could all jump on as partners when they're like, so-and-so's dad died, that you might not know, it's a friend of a friend, and you're like, oof, you know, that could bring back things for you, and we can talk about that. I think maybe there's a little bit of leadership, which is annoying, from us, that are more willing to go there, perhaps.
We got our partners on our podcast, and it was one of our most listened to episodes. People absolutely loved it and lapped it up and had never heard anything like it before. Hearing the partner's perspective of what it's like to support their partner through grief. And they were amazing. They were so open and honest and vulnerable, and they surprised they surprised us. People even told them to have their own spin-off show on how to support. But it was really interesting to hear their perspectives.
What we might do is, if you don't mind, we might link these certain episodes that you've mentioned today in our show notes, so it's really easy for people to go, oh, resilience chat, partner chat, yeah, child loss chat, etc. Because we haven't even touched on widowers. We haven't touched on friendship loss. And there's so – we could talk for hours. We could have a podcast, which is what you've done. So what I might do now is redirect everybody over that wants specific – elements that you guys do so beautifully, because this is what you do. And I know they're going to be like, well, you didn't do. So what we're going to do is link what we've mentioned today in the show notes, and then we'll just put your show there and everyone can go through. You guys are so great on the DMs. We'll put your Instagram there as well. And I just want to thank you, because I think grief is just not discussed. It's just not understood. And you guys are out there doing a hell of a job holding a big ass, heavy subject, as well as it possibly triggering your own grief constantly. So I thank you for the beautiful, courageous work you do. That's really important.
Thank you. That means a lot coming from you. We're big fans of you and the work that you're doing in this world as well. We know it's making a huge impact. We just like to say as well to anyone listening, our content and our podcast is often at times uplifting too. So if you fear, I'm going to come listen to a podcast about grief, it's going to be really heavy and doom and gloom, you may be pleasantly surprised as we do have a big laugh along the way, because we feel like humor is really healing and an important part of grief and coping with big life changes and losses. So
huge point to add. Humor is such a big element and feels so inappropriate, but I love that. Sal, any final words from you?
I just think what you do is so special, Zoe. Thank you so much for having us on and for talking about this topic that really doesn't get enough airtime. I really hope that this conversation has helped somebody, has helped your listeners, anyone out there that's feeling like they're isolated in their grief, or they aren't sure how to support someone, or they're just curious about grief and how to cope when it eventually happens to them. I really hope this conversation helps, and thank you for creating a container for us today to talk about this. And hopefully there'll be no wall sliding later, but if there is, that's okay as well.
You guys are amazing. Thank you for joining me on The Deep. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Deep. If it's left you with any burning questions for me or our guests, please hit us up by direct message on Instagram at What's The Deep.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hi, everybody. It is Zoe here. Change is coming to the deep. I want to welcome you to Arise. It's uplifting. It's quirky. It's curious. It's all about the mindset and self-discovery to be more helpful and of service. During 16 of the Deep, you will hear some of these episodes, and I'd love to hear what you think of them over on our Instagram at What's The Deep.